Okay, welcome back. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Couple quick announcements and discussion points before we dive in. First, about 10 minutes ago, the power to the building went out. Took a couple seconds for the generator to kick in. When it did, my computer shut off. So hopefully there won't be any further issues there. But if suddenly the Zoom meeting ends, maybe that the power went out, I'll try to reconnect as quickly as I can. Hopefully we won't have issues there. And hopefully the noise from the generator isn't coming through my mic. If it is, I'm sorry about that. Second, the plan currently is to allow in-class attendance starting on Wednesday. I'll post a message in the Slack sometime tomorrow confirming that after the daily updates for the next 2 days. If there is in-class lecture available, how many of you would plan to attend?
I would be there.
Yeah, I would be there as well.
Okay.
I will as well.
Okay. So some people, I don't want to go set up and be the only one in there. So we will plan to do that on Wednesday, but like I said, I'll confirm on the Slack channel and also when I'll update the website so that it won't say online only lecture. Like I mentioned last week, I will do my best to make the experience comparable online and in class. I will try to stay rooted to my tablet and not walk over and point at the screen. So that if you would prefer to stay online, you're welcome to, and try to make that as clear as I can. Okay. Any questions or comments on that? Okay. If not, then we'll dive in. So last Friday, we finished up state plane analysis of the DAB converter. In this case, we were modeling considering the drain to source capacitances of both the primary and secondary side transistors. As a result, we ended up with two different state planes, one that was normalized according to the primary side resonance, one normalized according to the secondary side resonance. Reflected that back through the transformer to make things a little bit easier. We end up with two different normalizations, two different state planes. From there, everything kind of proceeds normally. We do need to be, this is the animation slide. So we check the ZVS condition. The primary has a ZVS condition that we need to satisfy. The peak current, J peak, needs to be greater than 2, which we saw really is an energy constraint. We need to have enough energy in the inductor when we let this resonance start to carry the primary side capacitor from minus VG up to plus VG. Secondary can really always get ZVS, assuming we just let the converter go there. But still, that's going to require us to have at least some minimum peak current, which will constrain our output power above some limit. Otherwise, we just can't feasibly operate in this mode. Okay. Going through the state plane solution, having two state planes, everything proceeded more or less normally. The only important thing is that we'll need to be careful of considering when we are normalizing with respect to the primary and when we are normalizing with respect to the secondary. So for example, when we solve interval 3, that's really the only one we looked at the secondary state plane, were in terms of all these prime parameters. Everything else is in terms of our primary normalization. And then as we start putting things together, it's like delta here and delta prime, to get between one and the other, we'll have to denormalize with respect to the secondary side resonance, renormalize with respect to the primary side resonance to get everything to fit together. So a couple extra steps of denormalizing and renormalizing, but otherwise everything proceeds normally. We can go through and do the averaging step. For in this case, just the output current, because we have one filter element, the output capacitor, and that gives us everything we need to solve this converter. We looked at this output plane, which is the normalized output current scaled by the transformer turns ratio, something proportional to the output current, versus in this case, J peak. J JP, I chose just as some handle, same thing as JP. I've got some differences in my notation here. I apologize, but JPeak and JP are the same thing. And for varying curves of F, which is the normalized switching frequency, can look at the performance of this converter, can really glean everything we might want to know about the DAB just off this plot, but it takes some staring at since everything is normalized. If we want to think about, like, as we change the leakage inductance LL, we can infer that behavior off here, but it's a little hard to look at because it'll change the normalization in this I base. So everything shifts a little bit. And with enough staring, you can kind of figure it out. So we talked through a little bit of what we can look at here and saw some example waveforms last class. Today, to wrap up, I just want to show some time domain waveforms demonstrating some of these same effects. So these are plots of the output current over one full switching period of a 1 megahertz converter with design and parameters similar to the example we looked at last class. I'm just looking at the output current as I change the tank inductance, but keeping a same average value. So it's still the same loading point. It's some fixed voltage and power going to the load. And that's all normalized. So one is my average output current, whatever actually it may be in amps. So for all three of these, they have the same average output current equal to one. But as I change inductance around, I get different waveforms. Increasing inductance. Here. Carries me through these curves in this way. And what happens as I increase this tank inductance, it makes my slope here, which was, example, in our normalized conversion ratio is equal to one case, 2VG over LL. So as I increase LL, the slope gets smaller. And that means that my T2, the time that I'm in this phase shift interval, is going to have to increase. And at the very least, to get to this same normalized conversion ratio equal to one, I'd have this larger T2. But then because I spent so much time in this phase shift interval, I have to go even a little bit further to make sure that this whole thing still averages to the same output current. Basically, if I want this to be my average output current, then all of this time that I spend with an output current less than one, this area has to be matched by, during the rest of the period, how much area do I have here? And when these two areas cancel each other out, my average is equal to one. So kind of the higher leakage inductance I get, the longer this phase shift interval is. And then I need to make that up by having a higher I peak. To give me higher conduction losses and higher current stresses on everything. Okay. If I have same average value of I out and all these, but higher I peak means higher IRMS. And that tank inductor RMS current scales by the transformer turns ratio over to the secondary and goes directly through the primary device. So that'll be my conduction loss kind of everywhere. So higher conduction loss as LL increases. Okay. Next slide, that's kind of showing the same effect, but just looking at these parameters for every different inductance in some range. So I've got the same average current, solve the converter operation so that for every one of these inductance, keeping everything else the same, the average current is the same value. But as I go up in inductance, you see the RMS and peak currents increasing monotonically as I go up in inductance. Again, telling me larger LL means higher conduction losses for the same converter design. Right. So the initial conclusion would be, let's use the smallest LL that we can. Let's use the smallest tank inductance in this DAB possible to minimize the conduction losses. That, of course, is subject to, okay, it's the leakage inductance of this transformer. I can only make it so low. Has to be some value there because I can't get perfect coupling. So maybe there's some limit there. But in fact, there's perhaps an even more important limit, and that's really looking at, okay, we have this ZVS condition. Hopping back, we solve that. The ZVS condition was J peak is greater than or equal to 2. When we denormalize that, it said, okay, the energy in the inductor at some peak current has to be greater than this energy to move the capacitances. So if I start using a smaller and smaller LL to still be greater than this amount of energy that I need, I'll need a higher peak current again, which is going to put me at equivalently a higher power level that I need to operate at in order to get ZVS. Eventually, this peak current through the solution to the converter operation translates to some average output current where I get that peak, and it'll constrain when I can get ZVS. So this red line saying, okay, what average output current satisfies this ZVS condition, J peak is greater than 2. For really small tank inductances, I need a really high output current, need to be at very high power operation in order to get 0 volt switching. Very large tank inductances, I can get it at very low power. This point where my ZVS bound, exactly hits my normalized output current means that I can get ZVS at this output power, but anything below it, I'll lose ZVS. If I use a tank inductance somewhere like here, say, okay, for the designed operating point and output currents 15% below that, I can have ZVS. If I keep going and use some inductance out here, I plotted that waveform, but as it continues, go and say, okay, down to half of full power, I can keep ZVS. But at any point where I take the output power below this curve, I will lose ZVS. Okay. So that's kind of the trade-off on the design of inductance. Very small will give me low conduction losses, but I won't be able to get ZVS. I won't have enough energy to actually achieve ZVS during the primary side dead time. Very high inductance, I can get ZVS over a wide range, but my conduction losses will be worse. There isn't in this mode of operation an inductance that is big enough such that I can keep ZVS down to zero power. There's always going to be some minimum power above which I have to be operating to get ZVS. Okay. There are ways to change the operating mode and change the modulation scheme. We'll talk about those in a moment to keep ZVS at lower powers. But if we stick with this kind of modulation, we will lose it at some minimum power. Increasing the inductance just pushes that bound to lower power. Here's just an example hardware prototype from a paper a while back. This is a 150 to 12 volt, 120 watt DAB, switching at 1 megahertz. It's got some conventional transformer, primary side devices, secondary side devices. This is a high step down at 120 watts. We get 10 amps at the output, but less than 1 amp average at the input. And really kind of corresponds to how I've been drawing these waveforms and some of these example waveforms, where the primary resonant interval is very pronounced, takes a while because it is low current, high voltage. Secondary is very fast because there is a lot of current available and only a small voltage to resonate across. If I had the opposite case, like a high step up DAB, I'd expect these waveform shapes to swap. If I have high current to resonate across a low voltage, I should see very fast zero voltage switching interval. Okay. So you can see that here, these are the drain to source voltages of the two low side primary devices. See, there's this pronounced curved inductor current that resonates with these voltages to get up to zero voltage switching. So maybe it's a little bit shy of it in this waveform. On the secondary side, this is the VDS of one of the secondary side devices. ZVS happens almost instantaneously, and the waveform is really more dominated by parasitic inductance in that power loop, because I'm blasting 10 amps to switch through this very quickly. The solve time of this ZVS interval is less than a nanosecond, so it's really hard to see those dynamics, and we're more or less just a right angle here on the current. This is plotting the state plane, just taking these waveforms, normalizing them with respect to one another on the primary side and plotting it compared to the analytical state plane. You can see there's a little bit of ringing that comes from this inductor current ringing and from that resonance with the secondary side parasitic inductance, which is not part of the model. But other than that, matches pretty well. And then an efficiency curve of this thing operating over the full power range. Just an experimental example. Our analysis has been with V is equal to NVG, or normalized conversion ratio equal to 1. I'm saying here, MN is V over NVG. Written this as V over VG is equal to N. Normalized conversion ratio, just putting that N in there to say how close are we to that ideal conversion ratio where V over VG is equal to the transformer turns ratio, and the transformer is just doing all the voltage conversion. If we start operating away from that, what happens? So in red is an example case shown where here V is less than NVG. And this results in the current, like we mentioned before, not being flat during this power delivery interval, because instead of these two voltages exactly canceling out and applying 0 volts across the tank inductance, as I, for example, drop the output voltage, I now have some net voltage across the tank inductance during this interval 4, and it'll cause some ramping during that interval. Okay. So what does this do is it makes so that the currents available for ZVS of the two bridges have changed. In this case, I now have higher current at the start of this primary side resonance. So more energy in that inductor can get ZVS more quickly or can get ZVS down to a lower power. But the opposite is true on the secondary. You now have lower current available on the secondary, which would be lower energy available to zero voltage switch to the secondary. Okay. That sort of operation can be advantageous in cases like these, where it's real easy to get ZVS on the secondary because you have a high current output, but harder on the primary where it's low current. So you can kind of intentionally design off of this normalized conversion ratio is equal to 1 to shift how much ZVS current is available for each bridge. Solely doing this, you can't help both the primary and the secondary at the same time. You can only help one of them. Excuse me. When we actually look at the output current, this has really no impact on the average output current. All of this ramping kind of cancels out. We've got a little bit less charge delivered here, a little bit more charge delivered here, and it cancels out and we'll stick at the same operating point. So changing this voltage around, we'll get the same current out of this thing. To a first order approximation, at least. Start going very widely and start losing ZVS, that'll change. But within some limits, changing that voltage around won't change what the output current is for the same modulation waveforms. Okay. If we were more concerned about the secondary than the primary, V is greater than NVG operation, we just get a sloping waveform in the different direction. Be sloping down instead of up, we'd end up with something that looks like this. I can draw it well. Okay, where we've have more current available for the secondary side resonance, less for the primary side resonance. If V is not equal to NVG, we'd have to go through and rederive some of our state plane results where we had kind of implicitly made the assumption that this was true. This is some plots from this same prototype, just looking at over a range of conversion ratios and a range of output powers. How does this design, this specific hardware, operate? And it's looking over here at where is ZVS achieved. So in this, what's labeled as mode one, full zero voltage switching of all devices. And then as I start going to lower and lower power, you can see there's some absolute minimum power here beyond which something is going to lose zero voltage switching. And depending on the conversion ratio, if I go to a higher conversion ratio, I can push all that hard switching onto the primary. If I go to a lower conversion ratio, I can push it all onto the secondary. If I keep coming back, I'll get some combination of both. So down here is partial secondary hard switching, and then full secondary hard switching appears primary, partial, and then full. By partial, I mean as, for example, on the secondary, look at the VDS of any FET, should go from zero up to V out. Secondary hard switching would be I don't have enough energy to resonate all the way there. So when I look at my state plane, it predicts a resonance that looks like this. Best I can do is try to switch at this peak point, turn on the high side device, and I'll have some COSS loss that results from that, but not the entire V out voltage. So I get into what it's called full secondary hard switching. It means I have zero energy available, or the energy would take me in the opposite direction, and I'll have full COSS loss hard switching from zero to V out. Simpler on the primary. Okay. This plot just shows the efficiency for all these operating points. You can see the efficiency peaks somewhere out here where we've got full ZVS, but less conduction loss than going out to very high power. As I go up into primary hard switching, the efficiency drops off pretty quickly. Again, this is 150 volts on the primary and just 12 on the secondary. So the secondary losses tend to be lower depending on device selection. As I go down into secondary hard switching, the efficiency drops off a little bit more slowly. So that's one design example. This is another design example from literature, from this paper down here. Here they were designing a 2 kilowatt DAB for automotive applications. This was meant to go in between a high voltage battery and a low voltage bus in a hybrid or electric vehicle. 2 kilowatts, maybe a little bit low today, 2, 3, 4 kilowatts generally is the low voltage load these days with all the different computers and low voltage electronics on a modern car. This design had to really focus on variable voltage on both the low voltage side and high voltage side. So those are both batteries that are going to be charged in between fully depleted and fully charged. There's going to be a range of voltages in the high voltage battery pack and the low voltage battery pack. I wanted this DAB to operate across that whole range. Okay. It's designed for very high power, and again, the secondary side is low voltage, and in this case, very high current, 2 kilowatts at 12 volts is 170 amps. So this thing was designed with a whole lot of FETs in parallel. It's all water cooled to keep the losses down at high power. And this shows loss breakdown. See on the low voltage side, switching losses are significant. This is predominantly things like what we've called overlap loss on turn off. Even maintaining zero voltage switching with that really high current, it's hard to design a gate drive fast enough to satisfy that overlap loss equation. You need to turn off faster than the voltage rise or IG over CGD needs to be greater than IL over CDS. So there are a lot of residual turnoff losses at very high current. The way they were able to accommodate operating across all different power levels and voltage conversion ratios is to look at changing the modulation scheme. So here it's showing some of the different modulations that they considered. This thing is our phase shift modulation. Like we've been looking at, where both the primary sides, these VT1 and VT2, for their primary and secondary side bridge voltages, they're both 50% duty cycle square waves, and there's just some phase shift between them to regulate the amount of power through this phase shift interval. Okay. Here, say with the inductor current sloping like this, it's not at a conversion ratio equal to the turns ratio somewhere else. Okay. I looked at different modulation schemes, which largely consist of changing both the duty cycle of the primary and secondary bridges so that they're not 50% duty cycle anymore, and the phase shift as well. So this one has kind of both of these, there's zero phase shift between them, but different duty cycles of each bridge, and then different combinations of having both phase shift and duty cycle, or duty cycle only on the primary, nothing on the secondary, it's 50%. Looking at, okay, what do the exact current waveforms look like? Which ones can get higher current available for zero voltage switching at lower output powers? By finding the optimum modulation for each point, we're able to maintain relatively high efficiency across this full range of operating points. Okay. So those, just a couple examples showing how this converter might be designed, some kind of going further points about modulation. One last point that's going to lead into our next converter to talk about is DAB transformer saturation. And a problem with the DAB is that there's this assumption in phase shift modulation that our waveforms are exactly 50% duty cycle for these voltages from the primary bridge and secondary bridge. But obviously in real hardware, getting anything exactly perfect is never possible. So when we actually go to run this, if we've got a digital modulator, things may be a clock or half a clock or some delay time off, and we may be at 50.01% duty cycle on the primary side rather than 50%. Okay. And the problem is, if this thing is not exactly 50% duty cycle, then I have some DC component to it, right? If with this type of waveform, the duty cycles are a little bit off, then I'll have some average value of VP of T, have some average voltage applied here. Ignore this thing for the moment. That's going to be one of our solutions. If it was just the DAB proper, that's not there. So if I get an average voltage on VP, that average voltage gets applied to the transformer. And putting an average voltage on a transformer will gradually cause it to saturate. Even if it's just 50.01% duty cycle, that creates a DC average, and that DC average causes a little bit of offset current in the magnetizing inductance every period, and it just kind of integrates up and runs away. Okay. Same thing if there was any mismatch on the secondary, gets applied to the secondary winding and will gradually cause this magnetizing current to run away and the transformer to saturate. Okay. Can also run into problems even if both of these are ideally 50% duty cycle, but I have some difference in phase shift or some difference in my device resistances causing some DC volt seconds on either of the bridges. Either way, it'll cause gradually my inductor current to run away and my transformer to saturate. Okay. In a real converter, that won't run away forever. As the current, let's say, for example, I'm just a little bit off in my primary side waveform. So I'll say this transition shifts to the right by, you know, some small amount. Happen, my primary side voltage would come over here. Say the all other transitions are unaffected. Doing so, my phase shift would start a little bit later, which means I have a lower peak. This interval is unaltered, so it'll come down. And as I go through more and more periods, it'll kind of gradually run away, keeping this same shape, but just accumulating a little bit of delta I every period. And over millions of periods in 1 second, run away. Okay, eventually that'll get balanced. It won't run away to infinity. And it'll get balanced at a point where the additional losses due to this higher current kind of balance out that voltage. So there'll be higher voltage on all of my conducting devices. A higher current times that same Hahn resistance will kind of balance it and try to bring it back. This offset also affects the ZVS conditions, and they can have some balancing effect. Now, this ZVS transition will have higher current available and will go faster. This one will have lower current available and will go slower. So there is some inherent balancing that'll keep this from running away truly to infinity, but no guarantees that it won't saturate your transformer and destroy the operation of it. Eventually balanced by losses, changes in the ZVS transitions, saturation of the transformer. But all of these things are kind of bad. Higher losses, ZVS transitions eventually is going to cause hard switching, saturation of the transformer is going to cause higher losses and perhaps loss of regulation, perhaps damage to some devices. So we need to actively control and make sure, even in the presence of some small modulation errors or mismatch in different devices, we don't saturate the transformer. So one option is to use some kind of current mode control. We can sense the current going into both sides of the transformer. So use appropriate isolation. Put some controller that senses and sees where there, when there is a DC offset to either of these currents, and adjust the modulation of the bridges to bring that DC offset back out. That just for this transformer saturation problem is probably an expensive and overcomplicated solution. May be very useful if you want to have current mode control anyway for things like device protection or for improved dynamics. If you're going to have that current sensing in there, valid use scenario would be to just use it for your transformer anti-saturation control. Okay, the other option, and what I'm drawing here, is to use blocking caps. So DC blocking caps, I'm going to call this something like C infinity. It's just meant to be a very large capacitance. And strictly, I would need to put one here too, so that I can't saturate the transformer from either side. Putting these DC blocking caps there just means, okay, if there is any DC component to this current, it'll result in this voltage increasing. It's a purely AC current, and this capacitance is really large. It just has zero voltage on it, some very small ripple, and sits there. As soon as I start to put DC current, this will develop a larger voltage across it, which will counteract and balance those volt seconds that I'm applying due to modulation error. So putting these things on either side will make sure there is no DC current flowing through this thing. Any DC voltage gets blocked and prevent my transformer from saturating. Okay. So these blocking caps, C infinity, should be designed very large and large enough such that they really don't affect converter operation. There's a resonance now between this cap and the tank inductance, the secondary cap and the tank inductance. But if C infinity is large enough, then the resonant frequency of those two is very low frequency and doesn't affect our converter waveforms. And any voltage on this cap should be DC plus some sub-volt ripple at the switching frequency. with these is the analysis of the converter, if they're designed in this way, doesn't really change. They're just there for this non-ideal type mechanism. Without it, all of our previous state plane analysis would still be valid. We can just neglect the presence of any small modulation error. Okay, but that does lead us to what's the next converter that we're going to look at is the series resonant converter, which looks at, okay, if I have these series caps, what if I don't make them near infinity and let them actually resonate with the tank inductance significantly? Okay, so series resonant converter, one implementation, a dual full bridge implementation, looks just like the dual active bridge. The only difference is having some series cap in the tank and designing it such that the resonance between these two actually is significant at the switching frequency. Okay. So what I'm saying there, let's call these two Z tank or ZT is equal to SLL plus 1 over SCR. If I look at magnitude of ZT, let's call versus a log frequency axis, let's put our switching frequency somewhere on here. I put this DC blocking capacitor in the dual active bridge. What I'd try to do is make it a very large capacitance. I'd end up with something that looks like this for ZT, where that large capacitance causes a F naught way less than the switching frequency. And when we're looking over one switching period, it looks more or less just like this inductance. For the SRC, what we're going to be doing is designing it such that this resonant frequency is somewhere like here between the series cap and tank inductance, designing the resonant frequency of these two to be on the order of the switching frequency. SRC F naught is approximately equal to FS. Generally not exactly equal, but kind of in the range, a little bit less than FS. For the DAB, we have this F naught much less than FS. Okay. Otherwise, at least in this operating mode, everything else the same. We're still looking at phase shift modulation. Modulation for the waveforms I'm showing over here on the right. And we'll again begin looking at a normalized conversion ratio equal to 1 for analyzing the series resonant converter. One thing we are going to do is we are going to drop including the parallel capacitance of the transistors. We'd again end up with split state planes and a resonant frequency that changes depending on operating modes. So we've got G1 and G4 on, more or less short the input voltage across VP, and we just have CR and LL resonating. When we shut those devices off, we would have CR in series with the parallel CP from our DAB, the net effect of these four devices' CDS capacitance, which would create a capacitance in series. The equivalent capacitance would be approximately equal to CP since it's much larger than the CR generally. CP much smaller than CR in a general design. So the equivalent capacitance would be more or less just CP, and now the resonant frequency changes based on interval. So we need not just two state planes, but then at least three for when the primary devices are off, when the secondary devices are off, and when there is no CDS in the circuit. So we're going to neglect them in initial state plane and just look at the resonance caused by these two devices. We could go back and add them back in if we so desired. But so we'll assume everything switches perfectly with no parasitic capacitance and instantaneously for the moment. So we're going to normalize based on just this CRLL resonance. Consider just that resonance so that we can have just one state plane. Okay. So go through and again look at the operation of this converter by going subinterval by subinterval. Because we're neglecting switching times, we have just four subintervals per period. I'll call them 1, 2, 3, and 4. All as before, this thing is going to be half period anti-symmetric on all the AC waveforms. So we can really just look at periods 1 and 2. Assuming there's no DC in the tank, then what happens in intervals 3 and 4 is just going to be the negative of what happened in intervals 1 and 2 for all the waveforms here in the tank. But we'll go ahead and draw out the four subintervals on this slide. Before I do, I guess just general comments on this SRC converter. You'll see the IL looks pretty similar to what we saw on the dual active bridge. The dual active bridge had this trapezoidal wave shape, flat up here, and then ramping during this interval. Neglecting those dead time transitions, SRC looks pretty similar. The only difference is that there is now a pronounced resonance during really both of these intervals. You see it less on this quickly ramping interval. During this power delivery interval, there's pretty significant resonant curve to it because of that resonance in the tank. Okay. Initially, maybe not such a great thing. It means there's going to be more ripple and more conduction loss to deliver the same output power. But there are some advantages to this SRC that we'll see as we go along. So going through, since we're neglecting switching times in this case, in all four of our subintervals, we're going to end up with just voltage sources on either side of this tank. Go through and let's say this is 1, 2, 3, and 4. We have over here on the left, so in interval 1, both of my voltages are applied positive. Vp is Vg. And Vs is Vout. We go into interval 2 when the primary side switches, so we'll have negative Vg applied across the primary. Secondary hasn't switched yet, so we'll still have V out here. To interval 3, we do nothing on the primary, so we still have negative Vg, but now we switch the secondary. Get negative V out on the secondary. And then to get back into interval 1, we will switch the primary. Get to interval 4. Okay, so the next slide, plot the state plane. So I want to kind of prepare for that. So I'm going to find my DC solution in each of these intervals. And then my initial conditions, I'll just kind of label over here. Let's call this I1. This minus I2, this point V1, this point V2. Now that we come back around, we can label these as well. Because of the symmetry across the half period, this is going to be minus I1, going to be I2, minus V1, minus V2. Since it's just a flipped version of this half period. Okay, DC solution, this first one, have the DC current in this circuit. If it sits in steady state, has to be zero. There's no current source. Needs zero current in the inductor. Otherwise, the capacitor voltage is going to be changing. So my JDC will be zero. My MDC, we've got to select a V base. Let's do V base is VG for a normalization. So what is the DC voltage on the cap? Well, zero current in the inductor, zero voltage across it. We'll just have VG minus V out over N across the capacitor. VG minus V out over N. And then we'll normalize dividing by V base to get into our M normalized units. I'll just kind of distribute this out. VG over VG is one minus V out over VG is M, our conversion ratio. And then we've got this 1 over N. Then as we go through the other intervals, all that's changing is the polarity of these voltage sources. So JDC is going to be 0 everywhere, and MDC will just change the polarity of these two terms. So here we'll have JDC is equal to 0. MDC is equal to, we just flipped the primary, so we minus 1 minus M over N. JDC is equal to 0. We flip the secondary. Here, flip the primary, oops, excuse me. 1 plus M over N. So just changing signs in accordance to which polarity each of these sources are in. Okay. So now we've got our DC solution. We've got our initial condition on the derivatives. Since we've already plotted the waveforms, we kind of know which direction it's going to go. But in all of these, we could say, okay, at the beginning of subinterval one, I2 is positive. It's positive currents going through CR and its voltage should be increasing, so on. Okay. So I'm gonna go ahead and plot the state plane on the next slide. Thing that I'm gonna do from this general result, I'm gonna assume M is equal to N. Okay. For the state plane, make some decision about which conversion ratio I'm plotting. So following with what we did in the DAB, I'll assume the conversion ratio is just equal to the turns ratio, which will make my MDCs be 0, minus 2, 0, and 2. And each of these pairs of JDC and MDC will be a center of a resonant arc for my SRC converter. Here, all intervals are resonant in this case, since the resonance is in the tank. So I have no linear intervals, I just have resonant intervals on the state plane. Let's see, we got a couple minutes, probably get most of this plotted. JL versus MR. The beginning of subinterval one, we're somewhere here at subinterval one, I2 and minus V2. Call this point minus M2 I2. And the center of our resonance with M is equal to N is at 0, 0. So my resonance, I'm going to proceed with this radius, R1. And current's positive, it's increasing the voltage on MR, so we're going in this direction. And it's going to carry me somewhere over here. To some point, M1, J1. At which point, so going this direction, this is subinterval one. So we hit M1, J1, I1, V1. We go into subinterval 2. Now my center is at a J of 0 and an M of minus 2. I'll sketch that here. So my center for subinterval 2. I'm going to end up with some radius here, R2. And the direction of resonance is down here. End up with some curve, looks like this. Dang it. That'll carry me down to M2 minus J2. This is subinterval 2. I'll give both of these angles names for second subinterval beta, first subinterval alpha. Okay. Then that's our full half period. The remainder of the period is just going to be symmetric to this. So we'll have subinterval 3. Nope. Good timing. My pen is not working. I draw with the mouse. Go like this and like this. This point is minus M1 minus J1. So that's our complete state plane consisting of four resonant arcs. We'll go through and solve this, find that under these assumptions, the SRC with conversion ratio equal to turns ratio is actually one that we can solve in closed form. The transcendental nature of the equations doesn't limit us. And we can get a closed form solution for kind of how, for example, setting beta affects the output current. Right. So we'll do that next class. Keep an eye on the Slack for final decision, but tentatively we'll have in-class lecture as an option on Wednesday. Okay. Thanks, everyone.